Hello, and welcome to the Legendarium Green Team. I'm your host, Kip Tan, and with me today are Befuddled Panda.
Hello.
Ashaman.
Hey, everybody.
And Dusty Strings.
Yo.
Today, we're going to be discussing Accession, the fifth book, technically, from About the Culture.
Yeah.
Fourth one we're reading.
Fourth book that we're reading. And you know what? There's no real order to the culture, so read them whatever way you want. Starting with that, I'm going to go right to our newbies and say, hey, do you think this is a good opening point for the culture? And what was your experience with the book overall? Panda, Ash.
Say, maybe don't start with this one. I think that the scope of this one is just a lot bigger. There's a lot to take in. And I really appreciated the introduction that I got to the culture universe from Player of Games, from Consider Folibus, before diving into this one. That's my take. Okay. But then I don't know any different because I didn't read this one first. So.
and did you like it?
Oh, did I like Accession?
Yeah.
Okay, I did like it. I did not like it as much as I hoped I would. And we'll get into why.
Okay.
So I think I wouldn't have minded this as an introduction to the culture, personally. There is enough to it that it feels self-contained enough within its story and its world building that I think I would be okay picking this up first. And I probably would have actually, I would definitely prefer it to Consider Folibus.
Oh, yes.
That's just a no book question. I think maybe just shouldn't be read.
Whoa!
Oh, shots fired.
But
fighting words.
I would give this to maybe people I know that are very interested in AI and you know, the concept of transcendence and, you know, maybe see where they go with that. But as a general rule, I would still stick with Player Games as the intro.
Okay.
Oh, and did I like it? Yeah, I liked this one. This one was probably going to be my second favorite culture book that I've read so far, just behind Use of Weapons and ahead of all the other ones we've done on the podcast. It's got a lot to recommend it. I'm kind of conflicted on the structure. I think it mostly worked for me, though.
Mm.
There's a lot of interesting conversations and a lot of interesting characters, except for all the human ones. The human ones are terrible.
Straight up.
Okay. Dusty, how about you?
Yeah, definitely wouldn't put this as a starting point for anybody trying to read the culture. There's just too much stuff you need to know in the background that makes it way more fun to kind of understand when you're hearing what the minds are saying. Well, I had like a metaphor. I forgot what it was. It's like dropping somebody into a point in history without having any backstory. Like if they dropped you into Napoleon without talking about the French Revolution. Uh-oh, I said it.
My eye twitches over here.
But I don't think it's a good starting point. But it is one of my favorite, especially on the second read. I liked it a lot more. Okay, I say second read, but again, I'm only 50% or a little less than 50% through it on my second read. And I can appreciate it more now that I've read the entirety of the series. So it's one that I would recommend that if you finish reading all the culture books, you go back and read this one.
Okay. As for me, it's one of my favorite culture books, and I think it does work as an entry point into the series, but more for a specific type of harder core sci-fi reader.
Mm.
Someone who's used to scattered multi-POV books that eventually come together, but for a very long time, maybe don't. And someone who's used to being dropped in media res into a bunch of technobabble and figuring things out from there.
I can't tell if I liked the technobabble in this or not. There's
so many types of it, though.
Yeah, so one of the, well, this isn't technobabble. This is just an interesting piece of world building that I highlighted. But at some point, it's mentioned that in this world, there is an objective frame of reference for three-dimensional space, which that's not our physics, but it's interesting to think about.
The culture is very much not our physics.
Yeah. I mean, there are similarities, right?
Sure,
it has to be relatable.
But they've got hyperspace that's provable and traversable.
Yeah.
I mean, that, I don't know, maybe the fixed point of reference is just, you know, future physics we haven't discovered yet, but it's kind of hard to see how that could be.
A lot of this is future physics that we can't comprehend or haven't discovered. Let's just put it that way.
Like the entire energy grid.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
I think just nonsense. But...
And Neuralace, you know.
I mean, that's a well-established science fiction concept, the idea of a brain-computer interface.
Yes.
Yeah. Neuralace is just the extension of it to, to near invisibility.
Wait, but that's becoming real. Elon's doing it.
Neuralink, yep.
Hey, brain-computer interfaces outside of Neuralink are much more advanced than Neuralink itself. Come on.
Yeah.
No, I get it.
They just don't have USB ports.
I did like that we got an actual, physical description of Neuralace in this one. That was really cool.
The, little jellyfish-like object, yeah.
It's like a fluid.
Yep.
I must not have got to that.
Yeah, it's much later.
We got more tech description in this one than I think all of the rest combined so far, eh?
I agree.
Quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Which, is always a Kip book in waiting. So now that we've given our brief impressions, let's drop into spoiler mode. Because I don't know how much longer we can keep talking about this book without starting to talk about that.
For real.
So if you're not into spoilers, tune out now. I think the general consensus is, great book, maybe don't start with it. You can talk with us on Discord if you feel like you might be one of the special few who Accession might be the right start for.
Yeah.
Always feel free to talk to us on Discord about specific recs.
And then you'll become Kip's best friend.
Let's get into it. So the characters. We have a question from Murph, 1976, saying, I've only read a few culture novels, but it seems all of the humans that are recruited by Contact are eccentric in some way and need to be manipulated/bribed to get into action. Do you think these characters are representative of the average culture citizens or just the type Contact uses?
I hope not.
I would actually personally take issue with this question a little bit because I think that we see a lot of characters want to get into Contact, but very few of them seem to have much of a drive past the loss of luxury to their life that comes from it.
Yeah, I agree based on what I have observed.
Yes. But I would also say that we just haven't gotten to the books which have more intentional contact agents.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I said this in the chat, but I'm still not convinced that contact or special circumstances anything more than a extracurricular activity that the minds offer humans without them knowing to give them some kind of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in this book, that is exactly what it turns out to be.
I don't know about that. There was Lefid.
He
noticed the scar hull, the Lencher emergency message.
Yeah, but then he immediately went back to doing what he was doing. It was like there was no I should do something about this. No, it's I'm gonna hack and have sex.
Well, yeah, he's the forget it tendency. He carried on the message, he delivered it to his handler, and then he moves on with his life.
I didn't realize he delivered it. Yeah, he did. I just read that.
You find out about it a little later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's nice.
That was a situation when there was literally no minds around.
Yep.
But if he hadn't been there, I imagine they would have just, had a drone sitting by if they felt it was necessary to, scan incoming ships or whatever.
Oh, I'm sure that they do. I mean, from everything we read about the affronters up to that point, the culture was watching them, so.
But apparently no one had noticed.
Apparently no one had noticed. Yeah. He got to feel important. Good for him.
Do you think it was a setup? Do you think one of those, there was a drone or mine watching and being like, no, I'll let this guy have it. He needs...
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean... That's what the sleeper service was doing with what's her face and what's his face for 40 years.
Yep.
So yeah.
Was Tyr a culture hub? Did it have a mind in it?
Tyr is non-culture. They don't even really know who built it.
Oh, okay, that's right.
It's just left in the hand of its robotic syndicates. Which don't like other AIs in the habitat.
Lame. Okay.
They'll let mind-controlled ships dock, but they won't let them inside. And they harass drones that try and go inside.
I do think that it's more than just mere extracurricular. I think that is part of it, where it's you have all this luxury, you have basically anything you want. For those who are more adventurous, this is a nice outlet for that. But I do think that it's also a program where the mines can use pawns for things that they would rather maybe not get their hands dirty with, or needs just like some sort of vehicle for. Because something we did see later on is Dajio, whatever her name is, the pregnant lady.
Yep, Dajio.
Dajio. The sleeper service did try to convince her. Ultimately, it could have, like, made her give birth.
And it talked about all the ways.
Exactly. But it chose not to, because I think it would have crossed a line that it didn't want to cross. I think that's a big theme of this book, which is not crossing the line, but yet crossing the line.
Mm-hmm.
And the avatar, Amorphia, or Moria, whatever, she did try to convince Dajiel to, you know, give birth, to like talk to Beer, but ultimately that didn't work. And then they had a different idea. Okay, let's use the girl, right? And yep, that did get much further than when they were trying to do it themselves.
But that was a situation where this is essentially just the sleeper services pet project. You know, it's like, oh, these two humans had a messy breakup. I want to see if I can fix that. Now, like, it wasn't actually anything important. It was just like the sleeper service, like, well, I got nothing better to do.
They were like, I felt invested in this project, and yeah, I screwed it up. I provided the vote which allowed it to happen.
I gave bad relationship advice.
Yep. By sleeping with the man.
Yeah, that was funny.
It wasn't even bad that. Relationship advice. It was bad matchmaking.
Yes, this is true. Yeah.
But also bad long-term post-psychological analysis, which minds are supposed to take very seriously. And this one allowed a potentially lethal situation to occur, which is not great.
Yes.
Its original name was what? Quietly Confident?
Yep.
It got a little overly confident, if I do say so.
It did. It did get a little overly confident.
Absolutely.
It winked at him.
My problem with the humans being crucial in this is that the minds are so staggeringly competent in so many ways. Like, it's impossible for me to fathom how a human could actually prove to be of worth when you're talking about things that can do incredibly complex reasoning within, like, microseconds, you know, who can operate on like such incredibly short time spans and across incredibly long distances, and are unquestionably more intelligent and have more capabilities in literally every way, right? So what value add does a human provide there that isn't just like hand wave, like, oh, human intuition?
I think the part is that you see how humans interact with the AI, right? And some are like totally comfortable, some not so much, right? And so when, in the example I gave, it's like the sleeper service wanted a certain outcome, and they were trying to get to that outcome without forcing the situation. And everything it tried that was within its power, right, wasn't working.
Yes, but the like potential negative outcome that it was trying to avoid was on like the smallest scale possible for mind thought. Like the negative outcome is that Dijil remains depressed and Beer remains whatever he is.
Dickish. He really cares about Beer. The sleeper service didn't really care about Beer.
Yeah.
But it has this, they're also like, you know, more sentimental.
And that hopefully that infant, that fetus, is not, what did Gravis call it, turned to stone, half mad?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think what's interesting is that, yes, these AIs are so powerful. They can accomplish all these things, but yet they're still a bit flawed, you know? Mm. They aren't absolute perfection.
That's true.
Though Sleeper Service managed to pull off some amazing displaces.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Which we don't actually know the ramifications of, really.
No, they just give us the numbers.
Yeah. And I'm just like, that's cool, but like, what happened after?
I thought, because that was to scare the affront, right?
No, it needed to get rid of all the lives.
Its inhabitants.
Yeah. Really quickly.
Oh, those displacements. Okay, okay. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I didn't make it that far yet. Dreeve. So it was getting... Okay.
Though it also managed a couple displaces while moving at like 230 something kilolights or whatever.
Which are they are very dangerous. Capable. Yes.
Ash is just giving the most like, I'm sure that means something smile.
Yeah, yeah. Kill. I mean, like, I understand what those words mean individually. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. The implications of this is
unimpressed with the displays of competence of Technobabble.
In terms of like what the sleeper service, like I like the sleeper service quite a bit.
Me too.
I like how it was constructing a gigantic war fleet all on its own. For, yeah. We're preparing to construct a giant war fleet on its own for like 40 years and, you know, had more warships than the entirety of the culture.
Yeah.
Just in its own base. Oh, you know what that's like? You know, but done better is, I'm going to spoil Rise of Skywalker. You know?
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And please don't compare the two.
Copy pasting.
It's
a similar emotional reaction. It's just that in Rise of Skywalker, it was, yeah.
Season one of Picard. Let's just go there.
I haven't seen all of that yet.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
I want Paramount
anyway,
Plus to be
sorry,
free.
Sorry.
I think that's the most upsetting comparison I've heard you make, Penda. Well done.
My brain goes where my brain goes.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Speaking of the final conclusion, Ture asks, is the ending anticlimactic? And I ask, who felt influential in the overall story of Accession?
Sure wasn't the humans.
Shoot them later.
shoot them later?
Yeah.
Definitely some of those eccentrics, definitely.
Yeah, it was the mines for me. No humans, just the mines. Sleeper service, obviously. The torturer class, rapid defense unit, killing time.
Yep.
That one felt influential. And then, like, all the conspirators.
I mean, not invented here, right? The one who...
It's one of the...
Took it out.
Yeah, and then...
What did Not Invented adjuster. Here do?
Not Invented Here was one of the ringleaders of the conspiracy.
But they took an out? What do you mean?
They committed suicide.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I don't remember that. Mm-hmm.
It took me a little bit to understand what it did.
Did it, like, run into the object?
No, it depowered its mind.
Yeah.
Oh, wild. Okay.
It ejected its power sources and then disconnected its power.
Yeah.
Sad.
Poor attitude adjuster.
That's a pretty brutal way to kill someone.
Convinced into suicide.
That yeah. was
so... Didn't even realize it.
Oh my goodness.
Torturer class is right.
Yeah.
Torturer class is right. And now you understand some of the danger of the culture effector systems.
Battle memes.
Which, speaking of memes, I learned that that word was coined in, was it 1976 or something? And I did not know that. I thought it was more recent of a word, but no.
Old word.
It's from the Selfish Gene, right?
Yes.
Or is it before that?
Richard Dawkins.
Yep.
It's a good word. Wow. I'm upset that it's lost its original meaning, but it's always fun using it in that sense.
It's still representative of its original meaning.
Yeah. But memes are not just pictures.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, exactly.
That is true.
They're not just pictures anymore anyways.
It's true.
Memes have really evolved, especially with Gen Z.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I work with them all the time. They call everything a meme that's culturally relevant to them.
They're not wrong.
Well, you know?
They are not
wrong. That's true.
Yeah, they're using it correctly.
They are. So this is, we broke it, and then they fixed it.
Yeah.
Go Gen Z.
TikTok is the meme generator.
As the resident Gen Zer, I accept the praise.
Okay, so if we accept that none of the humans in this story are influential, are any of them your favorite?
Spock.
Spock?
Spock.
Yeah, because he wasn't in this one, so he's a character.
Oh my god, what?
Sorry, Pat, couldn't resist.
I enjoyed Ulver more this time.
That seems like a low bar.
She's I used to really think she pretty... was super whiny.
Yeah, no,
she's
okay.
Super whiny.
that was really frustrating reading basically like a narcissist teenager person. But it was kind of weird towards the end when, you know, she was a bit more grown up and mature and took the situation just like better than the actual adults. But then I think it's because she was influenced. It wasn't necessarily purely her.
I think she was the most purely her out of all the people that we got.
Okay.
Given that the gray area was like explicitly in the other two people's brains.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was in Dejil's and Burr's brains, yeah. Screwing around with their dreams.
Yes. I think she was definitely the most morally upright of our three human protagonists.
I think she did kick some of her spoiled brathood to the curb, like she said she was going to do.
Yeah.
Okay. In order to be a more effective agent.
And she's pretty young, right? Like in her 20s, like real 20s.
Super young, yeah.
She's very, very young.
Yeah. Which still makes sense, because, I mean, there's still a developmental stage, no matter how hard you try to get out of it, and the culture tries. But so it makes sense that she would grow.
Yeah, she would have the most to grow, because she did start off like just further behind. But I guess the kind of turning point is probably when she was essentially like Googling herself and realizing that she was no longer news on Phage Rock, you know?
Yeah, just one poem.
Yeah, and it was like not a really good one either.
And my third rate sycophant.
Not even one of the good ones. Ugh. Yeah, I really did not like Beer at all, mostly because of his affinity for the affronters, who are just the worst, right?
They are
like,
categorically the worst.
And wanting to be one of those, that makes you maybe worse than them.
I mean, would you rather be a diplomat to the affront and have to play bat ball and like lose every single time? Or would you rather be in an affront body and have the potential to actually like win a game or two?
I would refuse the assignment. Don't do any of that. Like, go do something else.
Bat ball alone is like the most unethical sport I've heard of.
It's one of them, yes.
It's one of them, sure.
I mean, they've genetically engineered the bats to be experiencing maximum suffering at all times. Humans have done some pretty terrible things to each other, but we've never done that.
But it seems like they did it to, like, all their animals.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, the affronters are the actual worst.
But we do somewhat genetically, but in other ways we'll alter people to make it less pleasurable, for example. So, like, we've done that. And so it's not that hard to believe that a society could very much go down that road like the affront did.
And that's part of the reason why I'm so disgusted with them.
Yeah.
True.
We've done it on much more limited scales.
we haven't, like, germline edited anything yet.
We haven't, just the list of things they did to make life worse for everybody, that was pretty angering to read.
Yeah. Sorry, we haven't germline edited anyone yet.
True.
That's currently up for debate, though, about if we if it's, like, legal or ethical to change a person's genetics and that of their descendants.
Yeah, I've got a friend who very much argues that it is, and we should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some cases where it's really hard to make the opposite that you shouldn't.
I mean, we can genetically engineer people to not be lactose intolerant. That's like a very simple thing you can do.
Yeah.
Or get rid of some of the genes that are more likely to, like, you have higher risk of Alzheimer's or diseases like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Or like, Huntington's. Absolutely, we should exterminate that, in my opinion.
Tay-Sachs. So,
yeah.
But these are, we're trying to look at it in a positive light. Of course, this is the whole, like, if you open Pandora's box, who knows where you'll go. But, like, the affronters, like, I get what you mean. Like, when they're like, hey, we can edit everything, they're like, how do we make life worse for everyone but the males?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how do we make their fear taste good?
Oh, gosh. That's totally opposite of us, because so like my dad's a cattle farmer, and you don't want to scare the cows before they die, because when the adrenaline pumps into their system, the meat tastes worse.
Yeah, but we weren't raised in a methane atmosphere.
True.
But
that is true.
It's pointed out that, oh, the culture has tried offering them alternatives for, like, an example for their meat. Like, we can give you lab-grown meat. It'll taste much better. And then the Frontier's like, no, the cruelty is the point.
Yep.
Yes, the that is true.
The cruelty is the point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Name any worse human culture. I don't think you can.
No.
Yeah.
No. They're created as a thought exercise for, like, how bad can this be?
No.
And can you imagine being the person who sees this and, like, exists in a world where this is the case and being like, yeah, I would like to be one of these people.
I'll be one of you. Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah, it doesn't make sense.
That's so morally reprehensible.
But they're jovial in the, on the audiobook. They sound like English jokers.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I mean, the joviality really rubbed me.
Tide really has like a like an English aristocratic accent. It's hilarious.
I fully buy that. I was just thinking of like people who just like laugh obnoxiously loud just to mess with you, or just to, you know, like rub it in your face that they're laughing at you.
He sounds like a big game hunter.
I can see that too.
He does, yeah. You know, but that's also what I thought was interesting. They kept losing diplomats, but I guess they have the duel and the honor thing, but I was like, if I was a diplomat to them and I was just straight up with them and telling them how terrible they are, I feel like it might work because they're always like, you flesh bag piece of poo, I'm so glad to see you. I wish your head was separated from your shoulders. You know, like that's how they talk. So like, what would be wrong with me being an ambassador and being like, wow, your society is really bad and backwards, and that's me saying it nicely, blah, 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 and then be like, oh, so funny, ha, ha, ha.
I mean, I feel like they'd like that as long as you were also participating in the ceremonies or at least being revolted by them in their presence.
Yeah.
They draw enjoyment from that. The question is, would you?
Would you? Yeah.
No.
There's also the element where you could like say all these things to them and they couldn't do anything about it, which they may like or may just kind of really resent. I don't know.
True.
It seemed like they didn't have problems with that, given that they adopted the name The Affront. Because they thought they described them so well.
Yeah.
Previously just named themselves after their star or whatever.
I have to say it was really funny, too, that the species the culture was trying to use to keep the lid on the affront were like, we're going to sublime. I'm done with this.
Yeah.
In the insufferable bad manners to up and sublime into elderhood. Yeah.
Oh, good Lord.
And didn't even, like, afterwards extinguish the species.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think that this book added to the conversation about subliming in this universe?
To be honest, I was real confused for a lot of the explanation of sublimation. I think I kind of get it now, but I don't understand where they go.
No.
Into hyperspace.
Yeah.
They're just like stardust in hyperspace, but still sentient.
They, like, transcribe their mind states into a form which can self-sustain in hyperspace.
Mm-hmm.
They no longer require a physical tether in the material plane.
Yeah, there was one mention of it that were basically, like, you get to be in infinite fun space without worrying about your body suddenly being destroyed in regular universe.
You no longer have to worry about the dependency principle.
Yeah.
Is the accession essentially all the minds or whatever that have sublimated?
Well, at the very end, we get the point of view from the accession itself.
Yeah.
And we get that it is essentially a sentient corridor that other species use to traverse between universes.
Okay.
From older to younger, from younger to older, because all universes are like concentric circles.
Mm-hmm.
Like originating from some sort of big bang that is constantly happening and creating new ones and destroying old ones and blah, blah, blah.
But who was it talking to?
It was talking to its like superior, kind of, or like its employer / creator, whoever it reports to.
So that being is in like, I don't know, sixth, seventh, eighth, whatever dimension.
Creatures that it reports to are able to move from one universe to the next, which is a level of technology beyond any involved civilization in the galaxy.
Yes.
In my opinion, it implies that sublimation is merely the first step towards a higher echelon of life in the real in the real plane.
Okay.
And that maybe once you like go through sublimation, maybe you learn enough, you become one of these even more detached entities that's able to cross through at mostly unrecognized locations using these bridge-like accessions that just don't get found most of the time. Because mm-hmm. they're black body objects that hide in empty patches of space.
Got it. Okay.
Wait, so the fact that it appears here and that the culture does find it, was something trying to move in or out of it?
I think things were constantly moving through it. They weren't popping out into the universe that we were observing.
Mm.
That was essentially kind of more like it's, I don't know, like if you were thinking of a bridge, like that's the middle section of the bridge. Things don't get on or off there, but it still crosses the canyon. Yeah.
Which is why nobody can really get closer or do anything with it.
Because yeah, it was just trying to protect itself slash respond in a way that adequately exemplified the dangers, maybe, of the approach that you gave it. So if you dipped into it in hyperspace, it would dip into you in hyperspace, and it's way better at that.
Right.
Did the way that it mirrored everybody make sense at the end?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That was pretty clearly laid out, I think. Yeah, the concept of sublimation is a relatively common one in sci-fi. I'm not sure that this book, well, they discussed it, but I don't think that there's really anything that can be added meaningfully from this side of the question. You know, so Banks himself is not a transcendent being, so
yeah.
There's no possibility of him offering any insight from that side of the equation. And from this side of the equation, I mean, yeah, sci-fi authors like to talk about it and, you know.
How do you know he's not a transcendent being?
How do I know he's not a transcendent being? What's the, yeah, I mean, what are the limitations of knowledge, right? There are definitely people who will argue that they're transcendent beings, and I guess who am I to say that they're wrong?
Thank you, Ash.
I mean, the idea of sublimation is actually, it's not even just a sci-fi thing. We've created it also in our own world, like the idea of heaven or the ideas of like Nirvana. Sorry, am I going too far into that? I hope I'm not offending anyone,
no,
but it is an idea. Like everyone wants to get to that place. So
everyone wants to grasp the absolute.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a culture citizen approaching the end of your life, what would you do? Would you go immortal? Would you store yourself? Would you want to be on the sleeper service in one of its tableaus?
That would be dope.
That is, yeah, that would be pretty cool. Getting to be part of those, all those historical reenactments without actually having to do any work. I don't know. Like, they live till they're 400 before they have to make the decision in the first place. So I don't have the perspective of a 400-year-old.
For real.
I wish I did. I wish I could, I should say.
Right?
I wish I could, but only in a society more like theirs.
Yeah, fair.
I might do it in this society, but it would require other people I know to also live that long, because I probably could do it after the generations I know disappeared. I'd be done.
Oh, ooh, man. Yeah, Freerun hits me hard, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, imagine it having to live with, like, Gen Alpha and Gen Beta.
I mean, I'm fine with the nude. It's not about that. It's about individual people, right? Like, you know, my friends, family, children, grandchildren. But like, once it gets far enough down the line, they'd be like, why is great, 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 great grandpa still around and he doesn't have any connection with us? Like, no, I'm okay. Thanks.
You're not going to be intimately involved in the lives of your great, great grandchildren?
I don't know. Maybe I get bored with everything else. And yes, so. But
at that point, the losses may accumulate and take too heavy of a toll, I'm thinking. That's a lot of damage.
That's pretty much my thinking. Like, even if I had these other people who were my loved ones, I would have lost all of the other ones. And it would have, like, no human, we're not designed like that. At least not yet. All right, that went really deep.
Speaking of designed humans, what was your favorite bit of enhanced biology in the culture of citizen that was revealed in this book? Oh, and what did you think of, what did they call it? Mutualing?
Yeah.
Mutualing. Oh, yeah. That was odd.
I get the concept. I get the appeal. It would be nice if, in our world, the woman doesn't always have to be the one to carry the child and go through
that. Actually, that is the case in the culture. It's just who's the woman changes.
That's true.
I just find it a little backwards that you had to be a woman in order to do it.
You can't just asexually, like, actually asexually do it.
You can't just, like, opt for a uterus.
Yeah.
You gotta get all the rest.
Yeah. That would be nice if, you know, you could, as a couple or unit or whatever, you can distribute the burden.
And precisely time it.
And precisely time it. And yeah, that part is kind of weird though.
Can you imagine being pregnant for 40 years?
Yeah. Well, I mean, some people do really enjoy being pregnant.
That's true.
And they keep doing it. And that's, you know, that's a choice. I can't say because I've never been pregnant. So I don't know.
The culture has clearly fixed all of the blood pressure problems.
My God. Okay, that's the thing that I would love is, and I made this note in my book, the ability to just, one, really understand biology and like human anatomy, understanding the cause and effects and what each thing in the body does, and then being able to regulate it. Can you imagine? That would be amazing. If we had that in our world, well, one, it wouldn't be affordable for most people. So I would love for it to be affordable. But that would be how you can actually live beyond, you know, 80 years, 90 years, whatever.
Well, not just live beyond there, but live healthily and happily, as opposed to like the current system where you get to 75 and if like you're still healthy, you're lucky. That sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, culture citizens, if you ask anyone but Overseach, they age not really perceptibly between their 20s and their like 300s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I loved the section where she was looking at herself old in the mirror, and she like she knows she can go back to her young face, but she's worried that seeing herself as old will make her act old, just like forever.
Yep.
Like she was so comically self-absorbed.
Yeah.
That I almost loop back to respecting her.
Oh, I totally respect her more now. And her like bejeweled spacesuit.
Oh man, yeah.
Yeah, no. Overseas, she knows what she's doing. And you know what? If maybe what she was doing for a very long time didn't have a lot to do with being a special circumstances agent. And that's fine.
I was really confused as to why she would be selected for special circumstances at all. And then when it was revealed that she wasn't, I was happy. That is, she needs a lot more character development in order to...
Hey, if the Interesting Times gang is not special circumstances, what are they?
Mm. I mean, like, it's special circumstances, but, like, with a heavy asterisk, you know?
Yeah.
It's just to facilitate like sleeper services' little called? Problem.
The Expendables? Or, like, they're, like, the XSC, you know? The generation that should have retired and did retire, but not quite. They still wanted to be involved.
Are you talking about a movie?
Yeah. Isn't it called Expendables or something?
Anyway. I haven't seen it.
It is,
Expendables
yeah.
is a movie. They're kind of like action heroes, though.
Yeah, but they're the older ones. They've like gone back and grabbed Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger and thrown them in a movie together.
Don't worry about it.
There was a movie like that where they were all retired. It was like Bruce Willis and you know a team around him, and they were fighting against the younger generation.
Yeah.
This isn't really a concept that makes sense for minds because they don't really grow old.
Not really.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
in that group chat, some of the older minds did not put out real sentences.
Yeah.
That's true.
This is the whole personality thing too. Like they don't necessarily age physically, right? Because it's not the same.
Yep.
But get more data, like you're naturally going to change because they are sentient. So and then the whole, you know, being more disconnected from the quote unquote younger generation, the younger minds that haven't been around as long, right? That's real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And we heard some of the intermind debates, like the rise of fleeting in the culture, where two ships will just like kind of permanently stay close to each other because they want to talk. And the older minds are like, wait, are they going soft? Have culture minds gone soft?
Right.
Can they no longer stand being alone?
Speaking of the psychology of the minds, the metamathics that they do, just simulating entire universes in their minds, that was one section where I was like, okay, there really is no excuse for them to depend on humans at all at this point. Once you've gone to universe simulation, I think you can probably handle most things better than your average human.
But they can't simulate this universe, or at least they can't simulate living people.
They can simulate
no, because that's unethical.
I thought that they did that anyways, and they just didn't delete the universe when they were done simulating, and that was the thing. Like, some of them still would run
they run simulations that are close but are not sentient, because sentient things have to have their own free will and bodies in the culture.
Yeah, can they can they measure sentience? I guess they they have
can.
Tech. They've solved the hard problem.
They can, yeah.
And because they talked about the acceptable range for Bear's gel suit and how he'd picked the lowest possible number.
Oh. Yeah.
And if you had to wear an AI-powered gel suit at your work constantly, would you want to make it stupid or smart?
Smart.
Smart.
No contest.
Smart, right?
I still don't get why they're always so mean to minds and don't want them around. I'm like, they're not that bad, and why do the minds put up with it?
Inferiority complex, right?
Who is mean to minds?
Like, all of them. They're like, oh, I can't believe you're here. Oh, the module, you're so annoying. And I'm just like, why? Like, what's the point?
It's just humans being humans. Like, a lot of humans just don't want to be told what to do. Right?
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. They also don't like knowing they're inferior in every way.
I suppose.
I do think you give the minds a bit too much credit. Like, they, yes, they are super powerful. But to Kip's point, they do have a code of ethics that they...
That humans don't need.
Use and adhere to as much as
mostly.
Possible.
Mostly. Except the meat effer.
Yeah.
But I actually...
That was gray area, right?
Yeah, the gray area, informally known as.
Yeah.
I think that what gray area was doing, in my mind, like especially since we got the one perspective of it trying to discern what had happened with this genocide on that planet, I think that that's totally fair.
Yep.
Like, I don't, maybe I'm being rude, but at a certain point, if you've done horrifying things, do you really get to just keep that and bury it? Or should it be brought to the light, even if you're using something that is questionable ethically? Like, I think it's less bad than what those people did by a lot, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, I mean, those people, while not being as bad as the affront, are, like, as far as I can tell, like, super Nazis.
Yeah.
I don't feel bad for the Commandant at all.
They were super Nazis, and do you think that condemning them to die through a series of never-ending nightmares is ethical?
Yes.
Yes? Okay,
okay,
cool.
But maybe I'm a little rude.
How about diving into a lover's quarrel that's been going on for 40 years?
Fine. They're just trying to be
a winning
machine.
It was better for both of the lovers involved, right?
It ended up being that way. That is true.
Yeah.
Did it end up being better for culture affront relations that someone else tried to do a plan?
Yes. Right? I think so. Because it.
Are you pro or anti-conspiracy?
I think that they should have crushed the affronters after the Adirin War. I'm totally on that boat.
So do I. Yeah, they could have smashed them.
Yes, they should have. I think it's incredibly morally irresponsible of the culture not to have done that.
Okay. So do you think that there was a rebound in the culture after the Adirin War that they went too pacifistic?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Panda?
Hard questions. I'm torn.
I guess you could say that it does set up a dangerous precedent. So let's say they take care of the affronters here in this galaxy and that's it for that. But then they expand to other galaxies and there's more aggressive species and there's infinite galaxies. So there's infinite aggressive species. So does the culture continuously just fight everybody?
I mean, like, okay, so let's look at this from the perspective of anyone in the affronter civilization who isn't the upper class male rulers. Right. So like some billions or tens of billions of people, I don't think it's ethical to just leave them to their genetically maximized suffering just so you can have a high minded view of yourself as a civilization that, oh, you don't interview with other people. But I don't think that's morally tenable. Right. It's like we very clearly in our human societies think that a lot of us have strong intuitions that, you know, it's not okay to just let suffering go on if it's just in another place that you don't see, right?
Oh, it happens all the time.
Sure, which is why in the 90s we said there's acts of genocide occurring in Rwanda, but not an actual genocide.
Yeah, so if I could snap my fingers and make that go away, I would.
I mean, it's happening now, today.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it does.
But
yep.
we don't have like near omnipotent power to make it stop, right? That's the only reason why I think it's justifiable to not interfere.
Fair-ish?
I guess it's more of like you're getting to like really, really philosophical debate of, well, who are you to be able to say what is right and what is wrong, right? Like, why is your moral compass the right one?
Yep.
That's the hard question, right? You know, sometimes people are like, you know what? I don't care.
But if you don't believe in your moral compass and its validity, then do you have one?
Right. And but then it's also like, why is your moral compass more right than theirs? Because the other side could be like, this is my moral compass. This is what I'm doing.
That is what the Affront believes it's doing to all the barbarian races in their sphere of the galaxy.
Yeah. I mean, the Affronters make like it's such an easy case ethically, I think, because it's incredibly difficult for any of us to have like a moral code where what they do is permissible, right? No human civilization has ever had something as bad as they've had. Not even close. But there actually is an interesting thought that one of the minds has that I highlighted.
About the Affront?
No, it was about how... yes. One of the minds says, for millennia, we have congratulated ourselves on our wisdom and maturity and reveled in our freedom from baser desires and from the ignobility of thought and action that desperation, boredom, indulgence produces. My fear, my terror, is that our freedom from material concern has blinded us to our true underlying nature. We have been good because we have never needed to make the choice between that and anything else. Altruism has been posed upon us.
Yes.
Mm.
I remember that section well. Was that... in conversation with anticipation of a new lover's arrival?
I think so. Yes. Shoot them later and an anticipation of a new lover's arrival.
Yeah. Anticipation of a new lover's arrival is definitely one of the more philosophical of the crew.
Mm-hmm. Was that when anticipation of a new lover's arrival was like, there's a conspiracy going on? Was that that same section or is it later?
It's one of them.
Okay.
Yeah. It's one of the times when they're concerned about it, but.
Try to say that name four times fast.
Anticipation of a new lover's arrival. Anticipation of a new lover's arrival. Anticipation of a new lover's arrival. Anticipation of a new lover's arrival.
Oh my gosh. I haven't got to it yet, but is the washing auction ship tapestry book? Or
that's a different one, I think.
That's a different one.
No! I used it in trivia once.
Mm-hmm.
It's in one of the books.
Let's see.
You're looking for it?
I am looking for it.
I swear it's in one of these books.
I think it's in the Hydrogen Sonata.
Oh, it's all the way back there, huh? Okay, maybe that's why I remember it so well.
I guess, so timeline-wise, this story happened after Player of Games and after Consider Philebus.
Yes.
Definitely, yes. Because, the Zadian thing was mentioned and the Adirum War was mentioned.
Yeah. I guess how far? Are there books that take place in between those two and this one?
It's a little hard to date some of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Maybe Look to Windward?
Yeah, it might be Look to Windward.
Just curious. Because, like, could you see if you did read them in chronological order or close-ish to it? Would you see like, an evolution of the culture and the mind? The way that the minds deal with these kinds of situations. Is that an expectation for this series?
I think that this book deals with that better than even reading in chronological order, how the minds talk about the older minds versus the younger minds.
I agree.
I can't remember, but I don't think the other books delve as much into that as this one does, which is why a lot of people like this one.
Gotcha.
So I don't think that it would matter. I think that just reading this book, that's why I felt like reading it after you've read some of the other ones, because it's developed. You have the idea of what the minds are and how they've changed in this one.
I'm looking at a timeline here, and apparently Player of Games is after Accession.
Oh.
I guess this is just, they were just holding knowledge of the Azadian Empire for someone who had a board game related problem.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in another galaxy, right? The Azadian Empire.
It is, correct.
No,
yeah, so it is? They probably have knowledge of all sorts of horrible empires in other galaxies.
It's in the Magellanic Cloud, one of them, yeah.
Oh, right.
You want another panda comparison?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Sure.
Okay, do you know what the Twilight Bark is?
Yes.
No.
Yeah?
No.
Yes.
It's in the 101 Dalmatians movie, the Disney one.
You know what? I think it's a great comparison. One. Great comparison. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. What is it?
So the Twilight Bark is when like Pongo and Perdia are like on top of a hill and they're barking to the dogs. Like, if anybody is around, there's an urgency, like, alert, top urgency, 15 Dalmatian pups stolen. And then it's that montage, that scene of the dogs barking the dogs to of each London. Other. Yeah, the dogs of London passing that message along. And then eventually it gets to the farm, you know? That's called the Twilight Bark. And the chapter 7, section 1, titled Tear, the transmitting of information about the accession. And, like, I can't even remember who it was that was doing it, but the description of how long it took and, like, all the different ways that it the message had to get communicated, questions being asked, and then answers coming back. That was like, oh, it's the Twilight Bark.
Speaking of, I think that is one of the most distinctive things about this book is the extensive signal sequences that it gives you. How did y'all feel about those?
Loved them. Best part of the book.
I agree.
That's what I was hoping for, and I wanted more of it.
I would have loved if the entire book was like that.
Was the headers too much?
No.
No? Okay.
No.
I also loved when there would be one conversation, and then the mind would switch to a conversation with someone else, and it's like, okay, this verse is obviously lying to me.
Signal sequence attached.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they definitely don't trust you now.
Yeah, like all the mind stuff, fantastic. I'm so glad he wrote it. And I'm so baffled why he wrote the human stuff for the most part.
I think one of my favorite quotes is talking about the anticipation of a new lover's arrival, saying, it trusts him no less.
That was good. Also, the initial chat, the Interesting Times gang is, you know, finding out about the accession. And then there's this one.
We have a question from Murph, 1976. So far, one of my favorite scenes is the secret meeting of the legendary minds where they drop the admin.
Yes. Yeah, that's...
I like
wisdom
this.
Like silence.
Wisdom like silence.
Should have kept quiet.
Silence. That's such a great name.
Pompous windbag.
Isn't there a question about, like, what's our favorite mind names or something?
What are your favorite mind names? Yeah.
I don't remember all of them.
I think mine is anticipation of a new lover's arrival.
Mine wasn't in this book, so I had to pick a different one.
From this book. Very much not my favorite overall, but
I like Killing Time. That one's a good one. Also, Fate Amenable to Change.
Okay, Killing Time is interesting because it depends on how you say it, right?
Yep.
It's
yep.
like, I'm just killing time, or it's killing time.
It's killing time. That mind actually might be my favorite culture mind I've met so far.
Really? Because it's like...
It's so gung-ho. I love it.
It's like, I prepared myself to die, and now have this calm running through me.
I mean, it's like one of those... It's like the rare culture mind that is perfectly decisive. Which is nice, like a nice counterpoint to all of their like endless debates amongst each other, which like are valuable. And I think it's good that Killing Time is an outlier, but it's very refreshing to see, oh, this guy just definitively took charge and cleaned up most of the problem by itself.
Mm.
Those warships. I mean, but was he ultimately necessary? Was the Killing Time ultimately adding anything really to the conflict? Or did they just do it because they got peeved?
It destroyed the attitude adjuster.
The sleeper service could have done that.
Sleeper service could have destroyed the entire Frontier fleet by itself.
Yes, this is true.
Which made it even more, I mean, that makes it kind of relevant. It's just like, okay, this one ship destroyed one of your ships pretty easily, and the sleeper service is that times like 1.5 million.
That's true.
We get to see the full strength of a GSV.
Yes.
Of a plate class cool. GSV.
Yeah.
Like, when it comes to minds that actually matter, it's kind of just the attitude adjuster, the gray area, and the sleeper service.
Kind of. Sometimes.
Somebody had to convince the attitude adjuster to do what it did.
Yeah. The not invented here, and the different tan, and the steely glint, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that happened before the book, like...
Yes, it did.
Significantly before the book happened.
Yes, but the outcome played out.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, it's really hard. If I had to pick like a short named one, I like Shoot Them Later, And I do like Not Invented Here's name, but one of my favorite things is the full refund Hamamdan Empire class main battle unit original name MBU604 convert craft vessel rated integration factor 80% NV self-assessed.
Self-assessed is the best part of that.
Yes, it is.
Yep. Full refund.
Oh yeah. My God.
That's what I just like the long ones.
Somebody ended up changing their name later on. I can't remember who it was.
Oh, it was The Rock. The Rock went to something different. It was Rock, and then it said...
Oh, Star Turn? Star Turn. Yeah, Star Turn, Rock First Era.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's,
yeah.
Oh. I think it literally was a rock. That's why it was calling itself that. Like, it was a...
A rock is a, like, class of... habitat that's not often really made in the culture anymore. They tend to be older things because they're from before the culture developed orbital tech.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I do like End in Tears. Just End in Tears.
Yeah.
Sad.
What are they trying to say with this?
Do you think, I think there was somebody asked this question, do we think that the names are descriptive of the ships?
I do. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I think a lot of them are.
I mean, the quietly confident clearly lost its confidence.
I think they're either descriptive or pointedly anti-descriptive.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, it's either just stating its function, basically, or, you know, making a joke that, oh, this is the contradiction, actually.
The warships certainly seem to have a common naming scheme.
Yeah. Mm. So the Not Invented Here, do you think it is the inventor of the conspiracy, but chose Not Invented Here as exactly what Ash was saying, the opposite? Or, like, why do you think it was named Not Invented Here?
I think the best culture mind names have many different reasons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that one of them, yes, is, like, the Not Invented Here is a hidden member of a conspiracy, a ringleader who has been hiding for over 500 years.
Mm.
Like, they faked their own death.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that's part of it as well, is that they've been absent and, like, nope, not invented here.
So, we keep talking about the conspiracy, but is this what it was page 72 or whatever, where talked about, like, no, what was it? It was basically, like, the idea that the minds were so, basically, the culture itself is changing its own evolutionary trajectory, like, just a few minds within it. We're trying to do that. Is that the conspiracy? Like, they do this to other civilizations, but the conspiracy is the idea that there are a few minds that actually have control in the culture and are trying to push it down a specific road.
So that's, like, the broad conspiracy theory that none of the minds really believe in. But what they do believe in is small groups of minds that try to make long, elegant plans for influencing galactic events and then don't tell anyone in case it doesn't work out.
okay.
But something that the culture's detractors say is that the culture is actually just controlled by a few, like, central minds who plan everything that they do.
Mm.
And that the humans are a joke being kept on as pets or cover.
That part is right.
Kind of, yeah.
Come on.
The human crews also make the mind slightly less likely to suicide.
That's true.
Which is why they're there.
That's why they're there on warships.
Yes.
It's not why they're there on GCUs.
Yeah, it's to keep the GCUs from getting bored.
I think humans can be, at the very least, they're like the fingers of minds.
Okay. Isn't that what drones are? Drones are self-sentient, so no.
Drones are like fingernails.
Okay.
Very useful for fine manipulation and damaging something, but not maybe necessarily the most human-friendly thing for affecting changes in the wider world.
I guess that's true.
I'm now imagining just like floating fingernails.
Yeah, it's interesting that a lot of the aggressive species that they come across are so, like, anti-machine or anti-machine intelligence.
And the drones find it too demeaning to take on human forms.
Yeah.
They use meat as like, an epithet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My meat mind. Meat sack.
Hey, if you had to deal with the cognition speed of meat and you weren't used to it, I'm sure you'd find it disturbing, too.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, they're like five levels above meat at this point, right? Based on what the Elinter drone has.
Just in what they incorporate into a drone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And like the shit mines have like an infinite labyrinth of memory to access.
Mm-hmm. Truly incomprehensible intelligences. Yeah.
Yeah. And fully self-sufficient power sources stored entirely within their circuitry, not circuitry, their thinking matrix.
Their bodies.
Yeah, there we go.
I was curious about energy. Like, how do you, where does, what's the source to power all these machines?
The energy grid. The energy grid.
Which I got the answer now, but yeah.
There's just infinite energy, and you can connect to it.
But it makes sense, like this continuous expansion of the universe, like in all, there's like dark energy, dark matter, all that stuff that they're talking about, you know, they've just figured out how all of it works and then they just tap into it.
Vacuum energy is a thing. It's not
a
thing that looks like what we see in this book, but who knows?
Yeah. We don't know how to access it, but if we had hundreds of thousands of super intelligences working on the problem, maybe we could find a way.
Totally. Yay, super intelligences.
Okay, we've got another question.
While you're looking for that, I just have a funny comment talking about the culture not subliming because they wanted to prevent the evils in the universe. Like, they talked about that for a while, like it was a fun thing. And then it kind of made me mad because in State of the Art, they left the Earth untouched. I felt cheated.
They gotta have that control group data. And you know what? After we recorded the episode about State of the Art, I was like, you know, I know that there's many different ways of gathering scientific data without having control groups.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they're not the gold standard, but do them all the time.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to say that.
It's kind of galactic opinion that the culture is maybe a little childish about their decision to not sublime, given their capability for doing so for so many thousands of years, that they're like staying in their teenage phase.
It's not a phase, Mom.
Contact agrees. It's not a phase.
I don't know, though. It's, you know, I guess you look at it differently. And, like, even in our world, like, people have different opinions of growing or, like, being better. Like, I think of the idea of rich dad, poor dad, in which his poor dad is his real dad, who's not rich because he uses his money and his time to help people. And his rich dad's rich because he used his money and his time to make himself more money. And like, if the sublime people are the ones making themselves more money and aren't worried about other people, then I don't consider the other one to be childish.
Okay.
Did I go too political or philosophical on that one?
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think this is a question where you can go too philosophical.
Do you think that the accession should have intervened and fixed the culture and the affront?
Ooh.
Or do you think that it did exactly what it needed to do?
I think it was just like, okay, I'm just going to let them evolve and do their thing. I'll check back in, you know, 5 centuries later or whatever.
If it's already a sublimed elder species, then did it even care?
Well, we don't even know if it's a part of a sublimed elder species. That's just a guess.
But yeah, we don't know that it isn't.
Yeah, we know it's part of a technologically superior species, but we've got no idea what their relationship with sublimation is.
Maybe this is their control group, okay?
It's yours.
Oh, maybe, yes.
Well, I think the culture is their barbarians, for sure.
Oh. That's weird.
This is such an interesting take on... it's not exactly first contact, but kind of.
Yeah. I mean, it's second contact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I thought it was quite a fun take.
What did you think of the captain's mind state that they went to... that Beer got, like, sent on as a trap?
I didn't get that far.
Did you think that the resolution of that plot line was necessary or a letdown?
I don't know why I was really introduced in the first place. Looking back at the book, and like,
she was the captain on the problem child, and the problem child was the one that had the first experience with the accession, or an accession.
Yes, with the strange star.
Yeah.
Because apparently the accession can also move stars.
Okay, here's what I'm going to say. Kip, you're totally right that the style of these culture books are wandering. It's not about telling a story quickly. It's more exploratory, which is totally understandable, especially in, you know, sci-fi space and given the themes and topics that this is dealing with. However, I do find that some of these point A to point B, the in-between is quite convoluted.
Yeah.
And the whole thing about, you know, sleeper service, like its motivation, why does it even care about these two humans? It's quite convoluted.
Mm-hmm.
I have an analogy now.
Yeah.
I view culture novels kind of like a trick shot on a billiards table where there's all these balls set up in specific locations at the start of the book, and someone takes a shot with it with the cue ball, and it bounces stuff around, things hit each other, things collide. But then at the end, maybe like one ball goes into a pocket, and then the rest are just left there on the table.
Yeah.
I think that's
pretty apt. If you're looking for every thread to be tied and it's super satisfying ending for everything, this is not it. But if you're okay with being on a journey, and a lot of these are tangents to build the world, and honestly it kind of like was giving exposition without just dry information, but doing it via a character, like a character moment, a story, a short story within, you know, the larger story.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like how you get introduced to Ulver Siege and her five beds.
Yes. And Lefid, yep. Right?
His wings.
His wings.
They work in half gravity.
Which on Tyr is fine.
Yeah.
I appreciated more the description of Tyr, the building up of this like crazy festival habitat that is built on progressively increasing or decreasing, depending on which end you want to start measuring from, circumference and gravity.
Yeah.
Made by long dead builders.
A lot of the descriptions is interesting. I mean, sometimes he gets a little too deep and I'm just like, okay, let's move on. But his imagination is just something that I do not have. Like, I can't even fathom, like, how you come up with, you know, all these different ideas and, like, descriptions of places and things and all that.
I imagine a lot of it was him having a few drinks with very educated friends, and then they just kind of, like, riff off each other for a long time. And then at the end, as a note, like, okay, interesting idea for the culture right here. I have, you know, neural lace or mutualing or, you know, whatever else.
Or a poor little misfit boy who can only be happy if there's no one light years from him.
Mm-hmm.
He can work on his little ships.
He can work on his little ships and make his little fires and look at the Baroque patterns on some long distant warships, not talk to the mind that's there.
Aww.
And then die.
Why were those patterns there? Did it explain or just because?
It was a security measure.
Yeah, it makes it harder to hack.
They called it process baroquing.
Oh. Okay.
And essentially they're encrypted down to a molecular level physically. And if you try and wake them without disarming the hidden traps in that fractal down to the molecular level puzzle, then they'll know that you didn't do it properly.
I was expecting that to be an important plot point, and it wasn't.
It slowed them down, but yes, you're right. It had absolutely no impact on perceived pace of the novel.
Just the fact that the attitude adjuster could do that in the time that it did, right?
Yep.
That is pretty impressive.
I think it is.
Yeah.
It shows that once a culture vessel has physical access to something, there's not a lot that can stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is the part where I didn't make it that far. I thought affronters went to there and tried to activate those warships.
They did, with the attitude adjuster.
Yeah. Attitude adjuster.
Why did the attitude adjuster help them?
It was trying to provoke the affront into declaring war on the culture.
Yep. So then they could credibly take action against them.
So then the culture wouldn't have to declare war first. The affront would have done it, and then they could just deal them a solid defeat.
Yeah, fight a Roman-style defensive war.
Yeah.
And that's, like, the main conspiracy, right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. Okay. Was I couldn't remember. So I was like, how did the affronters get these? They're so well low compared to the culture. So that makes sense.
And the shoot them later and the serious callers only pursued trying to gather information to uncover this conspiracy, and anticipation of the new lover's arrival just said, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking a sabbatical.
Yeah.
Wait, I thought
you won't be able to talk to me, but you can leave a voicemail. I'll get back to you at some point.
I thought the shoot them later was in on it.
No, the shoot them later was not in on it. The shoot them later was trying to uncover the conspiracy. It was in its own smaller little conspiracy trying to uncover the affronter war conspiracy.
Yeah.
Who was in on the affronter war conspiracy?
Like, oh, we're going to get killed. We both need to cover our tracks. And also,
the affronter war conspiracy was Attitude Jester, different tan, not invented here, and Steely Glint.
Yeah.
That's it?
That's those are the ones that we're sure of.
What was Sleeper Service? Did anybody tell Sleeper Service what to do, or was Sleeper Service like, hey, you know, it'd be cool to vent, to create a giant war fleet inside of me, and then maybe someday I'll get to use it? Ooh, this is the moment.
I think that's literally that.
I think Are Sleeper Service was like, you know what, I'm going to prepare, and I'm going to be ready to be called on.
Yes.
In case of emergency, but how exactly I'm going to do that, up to me.
Yeah, because Sleeper Service explained that it was pretending to be eccentric.
Yep. It was operating as a sleeper agent. Oh-ho.
Exactly. Oh.
But that was under the direction of the Interesting Times game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And hereafter, it is known as one of the pinnacle examples of an eccentric ship actually being an SC ship.
Hmm.
Now everyone gets to be paranoid about that, too.
Yep.
I love this.
It's quite the feat.
But who's going to be paranoid about it? I mean, like, for us humans, it's like, eh, that's whatever you guys are doing.
Well, most humans don't care. They're just living their lives, right?
The gods are doing something. We can't really affect them. It'll be interesting.
Doesn't matter. I'm going to go party now.
Yeah.
We did get significantly more detail about the culture's offshoot factions in this book. What did people think of those?
I like the Elantra, or yeah.
Elantra, yeah.
Yes, they're more of an attitude, really. That's how they were described.
Yeah.
It's an interesting idea. They're just going out into the galaxy, and they've decided upon a mindset of they're not going to do any changing. They're going to be the ones that are changed.
Yes.
And yet, somewhat paradoxically, they actually stay pretty static.
Yes.
Yeah.
It said that was a trait that they inherited from their culture forebears. The ability to stay the same among constant change.
Yeah, so I kind of like don't buy their attitude at all. Because like I would think like, oh, you're willing to be perfectly changed by the things you come into contact with? Okay. You as a faction will survive exactly your first encounter with another alien species and immediately assimilate.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't believe in them as a concept, but it's a fun idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't say that they wish to completely change, just that they wish to adopt aspects of the things that they encounter.
But they don't really.
They don't always, though. No. Depending on the culture that they encounter, they go from like 100% conversion to nothing.
The other thing that bugged me, though, was like they would let ships follow them around, and when they found something interesting, they let the ship have it. So it's like the affront following them around and then finding some kind of elder technology that would like help them. And the Elantra's just like chill with it.
The thing I found weird was that they keep their distress calls secret for a month.
Yeah.
Or even longer, depending on who you are and who you're talking to. But like, I don't know. They don't seem to have a very strong sense of self-preservation.
No.
At all.
No. Yes. The reason why I say yes and no is because the yes part is I'm going to send in my drone, and the, you know, fate amenable to change was like, you really should think this through. One of your kin has already done that, and look where they are. They're gone. So that's
like,
the yes part.
Ironically, where did they end up?
Right. The no part, though, is that communal relationship where they have this very coordinated, you know, we're going to check in with each other every however many days. Okay, somebody didn't check in at the appointed time. you know, stop exploration. There's a very coordinated go and see what's going on and try to help the ship in distress. So it's like both. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're definitely not anti-communal.
No.
But they're a little bit isolationist and they're a little bit fatalistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you had to pick a culture splinter faction or the main faction to sort yourself into, which would you be?
Main.
Yeah, the main is the best.
And by main, do you mean the true culture, the peace faction?
Oh. I mean, as a human, I would recognize that my opinions on peace or war would be irrelevant anyways.
Did you like the affronter who was like, you see how that causes some confusion, right? You call yourself the true culture?
Yeah.
I might want to go for the forget it tendency.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You're not a
Leffen
fan of
seems
all
to have a nice lifestyle.
I mean, yeah, but any number of cultured places could have basically the exact same lifestyle, and you don't have to enforce, like, Lent on yourself.
Enforce what?
Lent.
Like, the festival where they're giving up.
That's not related to the forget it tendency. That's a tier thing.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Wait, so what makes the forget it tendency special?
They're just more laid back.
Ah.
Like,
more laid back than the
humans. Problem? Forget it.
Yeah, they think that the main culture is not sufficiently hedonistic. They think they're too uptight.
I don't know where I'd be. I'd probably be an eccentric.
An eccentric?
Yeah.
Out in the culture ulterior?
Ulterior. Yeah.
But I'll be pretending to be an eccentric.
Oh great. So you want to be sleeper service?
Yes, actually.
Cool. Yeah, I also want to be an SCGSV, but that wasn't on the table.
Why isn't that an option for humans, huh? Why can't they have their mind serve as a template for other minds?
They can.
They can? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can join.
It's brought up a couple times.
I would definitely do that.
So I think that the first step up from human is drone. You go from human to drone generally. You can go from human to mind, but it's generally considered that there's not enough in a human to make up the basis for a mind.
That's fair.
Yeah.
You need like a bunch of them. You form a group mind, and that's how you go straight from baseline human to mind.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And most ships are a union of three minds, right?
Certain classes of like GSV, once you get up in size, some of them start having unions of minds. Some of them do not, though.
Right. So the sleeper service was originally a union of three minds, right?
And then... Yes. Plate classes by standard are three mind junctions, as are ocean class GSVs.
And we never... Wait, which is bigger, plate or ocean? Probably ocean,
I think plate is bigger.
Oh, okay.
Literally looking at the size comparison right now, it's still really hard. Plate is the biggest.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Plate, continent, desert.
Plate is like the size of a plate on an orbital, essentially.
Yeah, it's massive. Its continent isn't even comparable to the plate, according to this.
Yeah, and desert sure isn't. Desert doesn't even count as a GSV anymore. It's got downgraded to a medium system vehicle.
Yeah.
So I got the book, The Culture Drawings.
Yeah,
I haven't. You did? I haven't finished looking. Yeah. I haven't finished looking through it, but now I'm really curious and I want to go at all these different... Yeah, it's really cool.
Cool.
There's only 500,000 that's been printed.
Mm.
Ooh, I better buy one then.
I'm going to have to pick one up.
Yeah. I think it's like $60 USD.
It is.
Are there any fun depictions of culture human and plumbing?
I will take a look.
It was talked up so much in Flavor of Games.
And in this one, we got a length of orgasm.
Oh, yeah. His was relatively short, only about a minute.
Only about a minute, yeah.
Well, but he was.
Because he had his neural lace taken out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was such an,
jeez.
I guess, interesting scene. Yes, if you plot a jagged enough course for the ship, it'll do all the bumping for you.
It'll do all the work, yeah.
He's optimized his seduction techniques.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's always something weird about sex in a culture novel, and this one had several things to choose from.
Oh my god, yes.
I mean, I know a few people who would be into the idea of having sex with an AI mind.
And I know some people who would be into the idea of a zero-gravity oil bath.
Gross.
Where the air has to get displaced into your lungs.
I don't understand. Okay, yes, okay.
And you have to wear little nose plugs.
Ugh.
So weird.
That doesn't sound fun.
I mean, it sounds more fun than her receiving bed, which was for, like, when you want to play act as a queen who's sitting in her bed seeing all of her royal subjects come in and out.
Oh, I have no memory of this.
No?
It's okay. Don't worry about it. She has a lot of beds.
I kind of skimmed some of that, yeah.
She has five beds. Five, only five.
Only five.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot less extravagant than, like, five houses on different orbitals across the culture or whatever.
Or on different islands across the world. Oh, what?
Yes. By that standard, you know, she's economical.
Yeah.
Doing great, yeah.
She was willing to do with only, like, a couple dozen of her friends and family coming along with her on the...
And only her favorite mount.
Oh, yeah.
She's a horse girl.
Which I did like. It wasn't a horse. It was very clearly an alien creature.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's effectively a horse, though.
It is effectively a horse. It's called Brave.
Yeah.
At one point on, like, I think it was, like, Tyr at some point, there's, like, the sexapedal creature. I'm convinced Banks only included that creature so he could use the word sexapedal in a sentence.
I'm not going to fight you on that.
Probably, yes.
Not going to fight you on that. I did like the Ah Forget It handler who was hoping that by spending time with Ah Forget It tendency people that he would become more of a party animal, and it just hadn't happened.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I live in constant hope, but it just, there's no progress.
But, like, he could, you know, get one of the minds to induce that in him, you know, at any point. So, clearly the failure to do it organically is on some level satisfying to him.
I mean, would you remove what you consider your flaws? Would you have a mind go in and say, no, I don't,
absolutely,
I don't want to be a party pooper anymore?
I would like to feel accomplished for doing some level of work in my life. Yeah, that I would remove that flaw. I would like to feel good about things. That sounds nice.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any flaws that you wouldn't remove?
Yes.
Is this an interview question? Like, what is your weakness? Oh, well, my weakness is also my greatest strength.
Yeah, and which culture or alcoholic beverage do you think you most resemble?
Not the one that tastes bad. Or whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't taste good, but you look fancy for drinking it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, did you find any contradiction in the culture's stated lack of money and how much characters seem to be spending on things?
And the ruminations about, like, how social hierarchies aren't really a thing, but, you know, there are these tiny differences that exist within the social structures, and those are basically social hierarchies anyways.
And people who try to be artists are just childs. they're just children.
They're so attention focused.
They're pick me kids.
Yeah. Coming from Ulvar, that's like a hilarious reflection.
I do love Ulvar's thoughts about what proper society is supposed to be like. And the purpose of life.
Yeah, she's like thinking, she could have gotten modified to look like anything else, but she's really of the opinion that the standard human female is about as good as it gets.
Yes.
Specifically when it looks like her.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. That was so funny. She was upset about people breaking up with her, but then upon reflection, she realized that someone who doesn't agree that she's the most beautiful person in the world clearly doesn't have good taste. Like, their judgment is irrevocably compromised anyways.
And that really lessens the pain.
That is fantastic. That is the best coping mechanism for a breakup I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
Well, they're clearly disturbed, so don't need to worry about them anymore. Maybe I should refer them for aesthetic counseling by a mind.
That was so funny.
Yeah. Ulvar Siege, I love her. She's a great socialite.
Yes, I can agree with that.
Your enthusiasm for her makes me like her more.
There was a couple points where it was, like, kind of grating for me, like when she was throwing that temper tantrum and then Gray Area just kind of froze her in her suit.
Yep.
But it was good character development, I think.
I love when she was saying goodbye and Chert Lyne started doing, like, sonic booms outside to hurry her up a bit.
That was funny.
And it was just like, it only took her another hour. And then it only took her another hour to do this. And it only took her 45 minutes to get dressed. And she only spent 5 minutes choosing out her jewelry.
Yeah. It was a great development arc. Okay, it wasn't a long arc, but it was an arc.
Yeah, there was an arc. She was a ruthlessly determined spoiled brat, but if ruthlessly determined meant she had to kick the spoiled brat to the curb, she would do so.
Yes.
That was pretty funny. Yeah, I like the point. Yeah, she resolves, okay, I'm going to be a serious operative now, and then continues the rest of the book mostly unchanged.
Well, her mission ended, like, as soon as it started.
Yeah, she
found that him. Was hilarious.
She did one kidnap job, and then... And then you're like, wait, you mean I'm not actually being hired by SC to do this thing? And it's all a misunderstanding?
What a twist.
That was funny.
Then she didn't have anything to do, really. She was sulking until...
She had sex with Beer.
She had sex with Beer, and then she had a talk with Dajil.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Dajil really just needed someone to not cater to her, I think. That's what her character needed.
Yeah. The woman chose to be pregnant for 40 years.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yep. And isolated in a tower.
Yeah.
Think she had long hair?
Probably.
I don't know. She was going swimming a lot, but I'm sure the culture has hair nets for that.
Mm.
They have magical hair that doesn't get wet or something. I don't know.
She was swimming in, like, gas giant atmospheres, so I think she was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those gel suits are pretty amazing.
Okay, those gel suits, I feel like that is kind of the equivalent of like an animal companion, like Bear's gel suit. That was like the role it fulfilled for me.
And he's so mean to it.
I know.
Yeah, he was.
So mean. So mean.
Poor gel suit.
Yeah. Bear definitely continues the trend of not treating the semi-sentient or even fully sentient, but on the lower end of things, minds very well.
Mm-hmm. I really didn't like his character.
He's not a good person.
No.
He's just a bad guy. He's a really bad guy.
Emphasis on the guy.
Yeah, that's true. He's very male.
But you know what? I appreciate that he's like, I'm just going to live my life once, you know, and that's it.
Yeah.
Good for the rest of the universe.
Absolutely.
Because they do go over like the teleporter problem and the problem of backup mind states not being the actual person.
Yeah, totally correct there.
Totally correct. I'd still have myself backed up, but what do you all feel like?
I wouldn't. I don't see the point.
No backup for you?
Yeah. I would.
I have no idea. I really don't know. I can't. Oh, sure. So somebody else can talk to me when I'm dead.
Oh, so would you do a backup that's only for, like, storage?
I wouldn't use it, while I'm still actually alive.
Well, yeah, but, like, after you die, would you leave instructions for, like, a new instance of yourself to be made? Or would you just, like, leave the backup in archive?
I think I would do it at least once. Like, have a new body, I guess. Yeah. And then...
Be like, okay, no more lava surfing for me.
Yep. That's what I'm into.
I don't know, that's tough. I was about to say, like, maybe I'd have one backed up and they could reanimate it if my loved ones wanted, but would I want to put that question on them? Philosophical.
I definitely wouldn't want to put the decision on my loved ones.
Yeah, that's why I started to, like, kind of reassess.
I mean, we're finally free of Kip.
Oh, wow.
Maybe we need someone to bake bread for us.
Not in the culture.
Not in the culture, yeah, that's true.
Except on primitive month.
I mean, I guess this also brings up the whole thing of death, right? How impactful are deaths when you don't actually have to be permanently dead? Banks handles it interestingly. Like, there are choices where it's like, no, I'm going to be permanently gone. But then there are deaths where... You know, like sleeper service, right? It did have a backup. It could remain around, even if its like physical body was destroyed. I do think that if sleeper service had been destroyed, even though it had its mind backed up, I would still be sad.
I think it was right. I don't think it would have gotten a new body.
Yeah.
And there's Killing Time who just, it transfers its mind state. And it's like, that's like my kid now. I've got a little kid. Yeah. I'm a dad.
Yeah.
I definitely empathize more with that perspective on things.
Yeah, it's like, it's not 100% you. It's a part of you.
It's like a descendant.
Yeah.
Like a twin brother, yeah. In my opinion.
Because, you know, consciousness doesn't... I seriously doubt that it transfers, is my thing, you know?
It definitely seemed to be no continuity there.
Yeah.
But, okay. Wait.
It's not like the processes of the sleeper service stream out in its dying moments and then just, like, start running on new hardware elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Okay. Agreed.
But I thought that's exactly what it was.
No, it's a discrete backup that gets sent out, and then that can start running on new hardware somewhere. There's no continuity of consciousness.
I mean, I guess.
It's a fork. It's not one stream.
Yeah, so
sure.
If it sends out its mind state, and then, you know, it doesn't die, but that other mind state gets activated, it's not, like, conscious of both of those places at once, right?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that makes sense.
Conscious of its, like, its original one, or its new clone body.
Which is actually the plot of a culture book.
It is?
Yeah.
Which one? Oh,
can you tell me? Oh, man, I can't
remember. That we haven't read yet.
Okay. Well. Well, duh!
It sounds like Inversions to me.
Uh-huh.
The Uncle Tishlin or whatever, that point. See, this is the example of, like, wandering storytelling, but still being, like, useful. That plot point was informative in how this whole backed up mind state works, and he could reabsorb.
That was actually another layer or level to it, because that interactive simulation was not actually his mind state. It's a level beneath it.
Got it.
It's a projection of what he would do, but it's not actually a sentient construct at all. It doesn't have his mind in it. It just has a very good projection of what he would do.
Got it.
Like a deep language model. Like a chat GPT based on his reactions.
And got like it. A pea zombie.
But he decided not to reabsorb it because he sees it as just like it's different.
Not him. Yeah.
It's not me.
Yeah.
So if you can only imagine, you know, you do back up your whole mind and then it goes into something else.
I would be fine with reintegration of a separate piece of myself. I would be fine splitting myself into two, having them go to two different places, and then reintegrating later.
Oh, yeah, you're a fan of Ghost in the Shell, aren't you?
Yep. I love Ghost in the Shell.
That was the inspiration for the Horcruxes for J.K. Rowling.
I was thinking of the Time Turner, not the Horcruxes.
Scottish author. Yes.
I don't think so either.
Does anyone have any last thoughts about Accession?
I don't think so.
No?
Like, all these books that we read for the culture, I have more fun with it when we're discussing. Like, some of the reading experiences are really enjoyable, but it's really the discussion that really make it more fun.
I agree.
Kind of like Malazan.
Yeah, I mean, I love Malazan, but talking about Malazan is better even.
Okay, here's my final question then. Who is the least insufferable person in this book? Human.
It's
human.
Or it's alien, but not mind.
Ullar? What's her name?
Ulver?
Ulver, yes. Ulver.
Okay.
Okay, maybe the wings guy.
Okay.
Lefid,
yeah. Who gets his name mistaken by the girl that he's seen at the end?
He's like, really, I think I love twist. Her. Oh, Kevin.
Dusty?
Seaver's mom, because she only said four things. Man, I'm being really mean. I just think that these people are really bratty. And they have something
they live in
that
Victoria.
I will never have. I know. Yeah. And I guess that maybe I would act the same way, but I'm just from my perspective and my point of view, I'm like, shut up. So
I'll take our poor little shipbuilder and pittance.
Oh, yeah.
The poor little
He didn't get time to be annoying.
No.
He would be, terrible in an actual company.
Yes.
But I love someone who can find their place in life, and it's an unusual place.
Yes.
I think he made, like, totally the wrong call in not having that part of his personality fixed.
But he's unique. He's rare.
Wow.
He's that.
That's totally a valuable trait.
He's that pure rarity in the culture, a genuine misfit.
Not checking the message.
The way the mind treated him, that was cute. You know, like, oh, yeah. Do you want me to speak for you? Okay, you can just nod and, like, you don't have to say anything.
Say you have a vow of silence.
Yeah.
That was funny.
That was so scary.
I feel bad for that mind.
I feel really bad for that mind. It was naive and it paid the price for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But speaking of exposition, the exposition around Pittance went on for a while when it first got introduced.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was definitely one of the parts I'm like, you could have cut this down. Like, if he made use of footnotes, if he made use of appendices, you know, that would be fine in that. But, yeah.
Sometimes he's just interested in building up a science fiction idea, and he wants his ship store to have an actual, like, background in celestial navigation, whatever.
The spin was too fast, so they just had to adjust it. Oh my goodness. All right.
Yeah, they did one careful collision, which changed its trajectory to go right through a front space and give it the right rotation.
There's a reason why I'm not into physics and, you know, the really hard sciences.
I mean, I am into physics, and that was still just like, you don't need to tell us this.
And, like, the ejecta from the collision served to disguise all of the little satellites that were around it.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that stuff. I thought it was fun.
I thought it was fun, too.
I think some versions of it are fun.
And I'll abridged version. An abridged version.
The audiobook is slightly abridged, I will say.
Oh.
It would occasionally just skip sentences that did not need to be there.
Did you see, okay, at least in mine, this edition contains the complete text of the original trade edition. Not one word has been omitted. It says that in my copy.
Wait, really?
Okay, so there is an edited version.
There is an edited version.
Wait, Dusty, can you see if yours says that? Because yours is newer.
This edition contains the complete text of the original trade edition. Not one word has been omitted. Same, same.
Yeah, okay. Well, I don't think the audiobook can say that.
Got it.
Nope. Interesting.
Okay.
Now I'm curious if there's, like, actually a physically published version that is not the original.
Maybe that's why you can't get it anymore. Maybe Ian M. Banks was like, wait, you're just going to start editing down my words and publishing them in whatever country? No, I don't like that.
Oh, yeah. I guess we haven't told the listeners or ranted about this to the listeners, is how difficult it is to get a digital copy of this book if you're in the United States.
It's how difficult it is to get a copy of this book if you don't live in a country that has this book. Yeah, it was literally impossible for me. I had to mail it to someone I knew was going to come visit me, and then they had to bring it to me.
Oh my goodness. It's like the Twilight Bark, sort of, but not.
We appreciate your valiant efforts.
Yes.
If I would have done it earlier, I would have thought of it better in a better way, but I just figured I could get it on the Kindle. I had some workarounds that I thought would work, and I just didn't get to them, so...
Okay.
It's hard. This book is hard to find.
So, folks, what book do you think we're going to do next?
We cannot do Inversions next because it is apparently also not on Kindle.
I was not going to suggest Inversions next.
I could do anything beyond that, though. Look to Windward, Matter, Surface Detail, or Hydrogen Sonata, but I kind of want to wait to read Hydrogen Sonata.
I also think we should wait to read Hydrogen Sonata.
Yeah.
I am in favor of... possibly Look to Windward or Matter or Surface Detail. I think those are really our three choices if we don't do Use of Weapons. I think we're ready for Use of Weapons now.
I know which one I'm pulling for.
Use of Weapons?
Always.
Kip, do you think I'm ready for Use of Weapons?
I think you're ready for Use of Weapons. I think you have all the culture knowledge that you need, and you've already read Milazin, so I think you're good.
True.
The only thing that's challenging about Use for Weapons is the structure.
That's not true. The protagonist is a dick.
Yeah, but at least he's like competent.
Okay. You know? It's probably going to take me longer.
And insufferable.
I don't know. He's a little whiny.
I can listen to Matter and Surface Detail and Use of Weapons. Okay. And Hydrogen Sonata. Sweet. For free on Spotify.
But I think it's time we circled back to Use of Weapons.
All right, let's do it. Ooh, I have it.
I don't even need to reread it. I reread it when we did it last year or whatever.
Oh, nice. Okay.
That was my third reread. I also reread it last year,
but I think I'll just skip the first half this time.
Oh my god, you guys are not selling this well.
No, it's really good. I just read the first half so recently. I read it for fun.
Yeah.
I'll be reading the whole thing, don't worry.
Alright, start taking bets if you think I'll like it.
Last time I read Use of Weapons, I just read the first half.
Okay, fine.
Do I think you'll like it? That's a good question.
I have no idea.
Still in the dark. I think you'll enjoy talking about it.
I think you'll enjoy talking about it. I think you'll respect the literature aspects of it. I don't think you'll enjoy the characters or story in...
Cool.
I haven't listened to enough of the Malazan episodes, but how do you feel about Kalor?
Oh, lovely.
Actually, yeah, that's a very good comparison.
Okay, I will be reading some Star Wars before I get to Use of Weapons. I need some.
And we space these episodes up by like 3 months anyways, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Which is perfect. Hopefully I'll be in the States for...
No rush. No rush. Inversions. Culture is supposed to be calming, relaxing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're totally not supposed to read the last half of it in one day.
Oh, okay.
Oh, come on. But Accession, you absolutely are.
Are you? Because that's good.
The time scale for Accession in the end turns down into like 2 minutes.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Yeah, hopefully by the time we are ready to record, Dusty will be stateside.
Nice. So.
Woo. Woot woot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this has been the Legendarium Green Team. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Our intro and outro music is Galactic Damages by the Jingle Punks. Thank you, Craig, for loaning us this corner of your media empire, and Horizon Brave for getting us all started. You can see us on Twitter and Discord mainly. But yeah, it's been a blast, guys. Ooh. Thank you, Panda, Ash, and Dusty.
Thank you.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.
Oof, that was our longest culture episode yet.